This morning we want to look at the subject of virtuous mothers. Sort of a blend of what we see here in Proverbs 31 that was read, and also we would like to do a sort of an overview of the book of Proverbs and how it relates to this idea of a virtuous mother. We will look at some of the other women identified in Proverbs in order to see how they stand in distinction from a woman or a mother who is virtuous. Looking first at the definition of virtue so that we can make an application as we look at this topic of a virtuous woman and more particularly a virtuous mother. Brother George alluded to the fact that the primary thought here is strength. In fact, it comes from the same root word as virtus, which means manly strength. It means a woman's might or efficiency, might even mean her wealth, but it represents everything that has to do with, you might say, the force or the influence of her character. In fact, this word is sometimes related to an army. Again, carrying with it the idea of defense or the strength. And as it relates to the woman in particular, I think it could well carry with it the idea of an army of one, or the one who is a defender of the home. It's interesting also as you look at Proverbs that the word wisdom is described in chapter 4 of Proverbs. Get understanding, or get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Now notice this, that wisdom is spoken of in the feminine gender. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thine head an ornament of grace. A crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. I don't think that it's by accident that there is a relationship of a strong emphasis in Proverbs on the role of the mother, and at the same time that there's a strong emphasis on wisdom, and that wisdom is portrayed in the feminine gender. It shows the role of the virtuous mother in imparting wisdom, I believe, to the children. We see this referenced here in the beginning of Proverbs chapter 31. We didn't read the first 10 verses, but we see how this opens up the words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. And so here's this king, and the teaching that comes as a result of this chapter, he's saying, this that I am going to deliver you is what I was taught by my mother. And so even though this king delivered the Proverbs, he's saying, what I am delivering, I saw in my home. Personally, I believe that the king Lemuel spoken of here, I believe that it is another name for Solomon. In Proverbs, the first chapter, the first verse, it indicates that Solomon is the author of this book. I believe that he's speaking of his mother Bathsheba. It's very interesting if you study 2 Samuel chapter 12, where it talks about the sin of Bathsheba and the fact that they had a child, and the Lord took that child from them. And then the Lord gave them another child, and that child was Solomon. And Solomon means peace with God, or peace had been made with God. And then God speaks to Nathan the prophet to send a message back to David and Bathsheba that this child's name should also be known as Jedidiah. And Jedidiah means beloved of the Lord. And so here you have Nathan, who brought out the sin that was in this adulterous relationship between David and Bathsheba. And now there's another message coming from the Lord saying, this child will be loved of the Lord. And when you look at this word Lemuel, it means of God or for God. And I see a relationship here almost as if the king is revealing, King Solomon is revealing the pet name that his mother called him by, Lemuel, or of God, Jedidiah, beloved of God. She refers to him as the son of my womb, verse 2, and the son of my vows, making a distinction between the first child she had that was taken from her, that was conceived in fornication, and this child was come as a result of the holy union between the man and the woman after the vows are taken. And Solomon, that child, shares with us what he learned from his mother. Looking now at some of the other women that are spoken of in Proverbs. And I do this for a number of reasons. One is, if we look at the other women spoken of in Proverbs, it gives us an understanding that these women stand in distinction from a virtuous woman. It also, I believe, helps us to understand the tremendous responsibility that a virtuous mother has in teaching her children and passing on values to the family. One of the terms that's used quite frequently through Proverbs is that of a strange woman. The idea of strange is someone who is unknown to the family, may have a hidden background or an unknown background, and as a result of that, what the mother is teaching the son throughout Proverbs is, when there is an unknown background or a hidden identity, there ought to be caution. A mother instinctively wants to know who their children are associating with. And when there is a strange woman, there's caution. The strange woman is also described as someone who is adulterous and morally loose. And in that sense, she becomes the enemy of virtue. Some of the descriptions about a strange woman in Proverbs are someone who flatters with her words. Her mouth is smoother than oil. By means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. So she's a financial debit, I guess you would say, to the family. Whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. And so this woman is a spiritual threat. Proverbs 7, verse 10, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and subtle of heart. And so here, looking at these verses, we might ask the question, how do we recognize the early warning signs? How does a mother recognize the early warning signs of a woman who is adulterous or loose or a strange woman? She has somewhat of a hidden identity, or she deliberately tries to hide things about her life or her background. We see also that she has the attire of a harlot. That is the first physical or visible indication that something is not right. Her attire is the billboard of her subtle or seductive heart. She uses her body and her dress to advertise her business. We cannot see into her heart as God can, and we do not know it in all respects. But God has said that the man can be warned when a woman dresses to advertise her body and uses that to attract men. She is morally loose. Why? Because given the right circumstances, she will also be physically immoral. Mothers need to teach their daughters to dress virtuously and to teach their daughters to avoid close contact with males who pursue females on the basis of their body. If mothers taught young men purity, and they heeded this teaching, the females would dress appropriately, especially if they knew that young men were interested only in virtuous women. You see, before immorality can occur, the boundaries of nonconformity and modesty will first be crossed. Your dress is not just your clothing, but a proclamation of your virtue. How else do we recognize the loose woman? By her tongue. Women talk about what is important to them. The loose woman has a smooth and a flattering tongue, and is used in a way that is designed to seduce the male's attention or attraction. One of the distinct marks of a virtuous woman, in contrast, is carefulness to be sincere or to be real, rather than to be subtle or to be coy or to be devious, and to be truthful in her conversation. Proverbs 31, verse 26 says, "She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness." Another type of woman that is shown in Proverbs is the foolish or the clamorous or the brawling woman. And I've lumped them all together. It simply means that a woman who is given to strife, or a woman who is argumentative, a woman who is foolish, or by that we mean simple and short-sighted. By clamorous we understand loud or demanding or insistent on their way, or one who creates an uproar or a commotion until she gets her way. She imagines her clamor is a good thing because, after all, it's obtaining a good result. It is the way she achieves her end. But in reality, she's only showing her lack of knowledge. You cannot trust her words because her words are different from true reality. A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. The thought is simply this, that a foolish woman will eventually destroy her house unless she changes her ways. This verse, "It is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house." The thought here is, sometimes in dealing with this type of a woman, it's better to walk away. It's better to separate yourself from that conversation, which can only go one way, and that is downhill, because the woman is determined to strive and be argumentative and contentious to the point of getting her own way. And Proverbs is saying it's better to sit on the corner of a roof. In other words, to sit on the point of a corner is literally what it means. A pain in the posterior. Sit there all day. Be exposed to the heat, to the cold, to the storms. Anything that the weather can bring is still better than trying to deal with this type of a woman. I didn't say that. God said that. Virtue stands opposed to clamor, to brawling, or to insisting on your way. Very closely related to an angry or contentious woman, one who is given to strife or argument. Not only given to debate, that's contentious, but also angry that others do not agree with them. Another type of woman spoken of is the odious woman. Specifically, this refers to one who is hateful or spiteful or vengeful, who will go out of her way to make sure that anyone who crosses her will pay for what they have done. And Solomon goes on to describe this woman as one of the three things that disturb the earth. The thought is this, is that her attitude goes beyond the disturbance of her immediate family and spreads out to those around her. And then there's an indiscreet woman who's referred to as beautiful but lacking in good judgment. It says, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman without discretion. In other words, a woman who looks like a queen but acts like a pig is exactly what it's saying. Now the virtuous mother stands in contrast to all of this. It doesn't mean that a virtuous mother does not struggle at times in each one of these areas, because after all, she's as human as any other woman. But she has committed herself. She has committed herself to living a different pattern of life. She is teaching her family, she's teaching her children to live in a different way. Her role, the role of a virtuous woman, is also described in Proverbs. In various phrases throughout the book, "She that bare thee shall rejoice." This is a picture of a mother's love. A mother loves to have children. It's simply what it's saying. And she rejoices when she looks at a newborn baby. There's another phrase in Proverbs. It's referred to as the law of the mother. And this simply means that the mother sets expectations for the home. And it is appropriate for the mother to set expectations for the home. I can think of one as an example. When my son was old enough to begin driving, one of the expectations that was set by my wife was that if you want to get the hours that are necessary to apply for your license by driving with me, there will be no reckless or incautious driving, or I simply won't ride with you. And that worked for when Mom was driving. Another phrase, tender and beloved in the sight of thy mother. A mother is known for her empathy or sympathy. When a child is hurt, he goes typically to mother because they know mother will identify with their hurt. Mother will feel it. A foolish son is heaviness to the mother. This parallels very closely to what Brother George shared about the sword piercing the soul. A foolish son is heaviness to the mother. The mother carries a burden for her children, especially for those who go astray. And now I believe there's another verse that speaks very clearly to the sons and the daughters. Despise her not when you are older. When you get older in life to the point where you feel that you're able to make your own decisions, be careful that you don't make decisions that deliberately despise your mother. You may no longer be under her law, but she is to be honored for a life service that she has given to you. Notice this verse. The eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth, or holds it as insignificant to obey his mother. The ravens of the valley shall pick it out, that is his eyes, and the young eagles shall eat it. The thought is this. A child hears the instruction of his mother as he gets older and he goes, and what the scripture is saying, when you do that, just remember, you are holding what your mother says as insignificant. The eye that mocks the father or despises the mother. The ravens of the valley shall pick it out. What God is saying is this, I believe. The very thing that you would roll your eyes at your mother, in order to despise her, may be the exact same thing that God will use to bring judgment in your life, in that area. And then you'll remember, yes, that's just what my mother told me. A child left to himself shames his mother. I see in this the responsibility of the father to support the mother in discipline. The father is away in many cases most of the day, and the mother deals with disciplining the children. And many times when the father gets home, the mother can be completely worn out with disciplining the child. And perhaps there's still some leftover need for discipline. And typically the father, when he comes home from work, looks forward to the thought of relaxation. And when the mother comes to the father and says, you know, we had these issues today with the children and with discipline, the father will typically want to respond by saying, I really don't want to deal with that. Didn't you deal with that today? Well, you need to deal with it when it occurs. And some of that may be true. But I believe the point is this. Does the child know that when the mother is disobeyed, father will step in? Or you will answer to your father for how you treat your mother. Discipline is spoken of primarily as being the responsibility of the father. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Hebrews, furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. You want to honor your mother and for the virtue that she stands for in the home, or your wife, I should say, be the disciplinarian for the family. Going now to Proverbs 31 and picking out some of the points that are now referenced here, I guess you'd say in a positive or an explanatory way to reveal who this virtuous woman is, what her life is like. I look at verses 11 and 12. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. This could affect many different areas. Trustworthiness in finances, that when the husband leaves her with the checkbook, he doesn't have to fear how she might spend money. But I think perhaps another area where the heart of the husband should safely trust in the virtuous woman is that when women are sharing with one another, they will share their struggles. And that is appropriate. Women need to have friends outside of their husband. But there needs to be caution in the sense that she will do him good and not evil. The husband can safely trust the woman in sharing her struggles with other women, that she will do him good and not evil. We see in many of the verses here that the virtuous mother is someone who works with her hands. Verses 13, verse 17, 19, 22, 24. All those verses speak of the fact that a woman works with her hands. She is industrious. She is self-motivated. That's the role that a virtuous mother plays in the family. She doesn't hit the time clock in the morning and then check out in the afternoon and it's over. Her work continues on and she responds to the needs of her family. That is what a virtuous mother does day after day and many times without recognition. She's resourceful. You see that in verses 14, 16, 18, 21, 24. 14, she's like a merchant ship that brings her food from afar. Verse 16, she considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand she planteth a vineyard. She has a business sense. She makes business evaluations. Her work may be home-based, but yet, and she may work outside of her home from the basis of her home, so to speak. But the thought is this, is that in her work, there's prudence, there's foresight, there's planning. She's evaluating things on the basis of what she knows the means are and what the family's needs are. And she finds a way to make it work within the means. How many times have virtuous mothers made up the difference between the lack of means and the greatness of the need? We see that she's very time conscious. She leads a very busy life. Verses 15 and 18 speak of that. She rises while it's yet night and giveth her meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. I think the thought there in verse 15 is also, even though that she's very busy, she's very industrious, there may be time when she needs help from other people. She gives her portion to her maidens. And I think a woman ought not to feel that she is insufficient or inadequate because at times she may need help. It's very clear in this passage that there are times when a virtuous mother can benefit from help. We see that she assumes responsibility for her household. That term, her household, is used in a number of verses, 16, 21, 27. The fact that she's calling it her household, or it's referred to as her household, she's saying, I am taking responsibility in the home. I will see that the home, or that the needs of the home, are met. And even though that she has a her household focus, or she looks at her family as her primary care, her primary responsibility, yet she also has an outward focus beyond that of her family. We see that in verse 20. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. So she has a focus on the home, but she also teaches her children, her family, to look outside the home and to see the needs of others. How does she do that? She does that by modeling it in the home, seeing the needs, not only of her own family, but the needs of others. As the family looks at the virtuous mother taking care of needs inside and outside the home, they develop a sense of feeling privileged to have such a mother. Because a virtuous mother blesses the needy. I see also that this virtuous mother frees the husband for his calling in life. Verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. In other words, he has a position of responsibility outside the home. And because the woman has a home focus and a home-based business and a home-based care, the husband can have more of an outward focus throughout the day and can take on additional responsibilities in providing for the home. It allows him to conduct his other business. And because of his wife, the husband is known in the gates and sits among the elders. We see also that this woman is very presentable. We looked at inappropriate attire. Now we see that she is appropriately attired and also appropriately attires or dresses her family. And I believe it's spoken of in a beautiful way, verse 21. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. Verse 22, she maketh herself coverings of tapestry, and her clothing is silk and purple. Moving down to verse 25, notice how now there's a shift between physical clothing and a representation of a spiritual meaning in relation to clothing. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. In other words, there's her clothing that she dresses her family with is typology. And I want you to see that because I believe that's such an important point. First of all, if we look at it specifically just from a physical aspect, we say, well, she's dressing them in scarlet. That's a sign of wealth. She's dressing them in silk and purple. That's another sign of wealth or royalty. And if we look at the New Testament, we see where the holy women are not to adorn themselves in costly array. And we can look at those two passages and we can say, well, how do we reconcile those? First of all, I'd like to point out that this is a Solomon. This is a king who's speaking about his mother. And so he is as a king's son, would have been dressed by his mother in a in a way that was appropriate to his station. If he is the son of a king, he needs to dress like the son of a king. And so the mother makes sure that he's dressed appropriately to represent the family for what the family is. And so there's a point to be made there in dressing the children appropriately. But I believe there's more than that. This idea of scarlet, an alternate rendering of scarlet, is also double garments. To get the color scarlet itself, wool or clothing had to be double dipped in a red dye in order to get it fully to what would have been appropriately termed scarlet. And so, number one, it took twice the work. Secondly, the thought is, in this scarlet being a double garment, understanding the culture of that time, there was an inner and an outer cloak. There was a tunic, and then there was a cloak that was thrown over. In relation to the man specifically, the tunic was what he wore when he was working or went to war. But when he left the house, he always left the house with his cloak, which was thrown over his tunic because that was a representation of his family. The robe represented his family station. Often you could tell by the robe what class or type of person you were meeting or dealing with. And so the thought is this. She looks at what the needs are of the family in relation to the weather. She is not afraid of the snow. All her family has clothing in scarlet or the double garments. When they leave the house, they have both the tunic and the cloak. They're prepared for any type of weather or any type of working in any type of role that would be the responsibility or the vocation of those children. Not only will she do that, but she will go to twice the work in order to make sure that it is appropriate. And then you have the thought here of the silk and the purple. And certainly that speaks of royalty. And here is a son who is a royal son. And again, the idea of being appropriate. But looking at it in the spiritual sense now, if you look at Exodus chapter 39, and you look in there at the vestments of the priest when he served in the temple, you will see that there is scarlet, there is purple, there's fine linen, there's silk. All of that is represented in the vestments of the priest as he serves in the temple. Scarlet is clearly a picture of redemption. Purple is clearly a picture of royalty. All of these are clearly a picture of a redeemed child of God. Looking at it this way then, in the clothing of her children, and it specifically mentions this, so I have the right to mention it also. In the clothing of her children, she is going to make sure that it's appropriate for their vocation or their work or their class or their culture. She is going to make sure that it represents redemption, that it's going to represent royalty, because it's who they represent as they go out into public. When her children leave her home, they are dressed to represent that they are sons and daughters of a king. What is her reward then for all of this? Verse 28, her children bless her. Her husband also, he praises her. So both the children and the husband recognize and appreciate virtue in a mother. On this day, no matter who your mother is, there will be certain aspects of her motherhood that represent virtue. You need to affirm them. You need to praise her for them. There is no greater encouragement that a virtuous mother can have than for her family to affirm those areas of virtue in her life. Virtuous women need encouragement. Her husband looks upon her as the best. Verse 29. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. It's basically saying that the husband has no other interests. Her life is a legacy. This means that after she is gone, mother will be remembered. We heard of that in the opening with the flowers on the grave. Notice it here in verse 25, the end of the verse. She shall rejoice in time to come. She is going to be remembered in the future for what she is doing now in the home. Her husband and her children are going to rise and call her blessed in verse 28. They're going to continue to praise her. Verse 31, give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Her influence is going to continue long after her death. Perhaps you look at all these things as a mother this morning and you say, well, that's a tremendous role. I don't know how I can ever live up to all of that. If you are thinking that this morning, then you can identify with how I feel when I look at the qualifications for a minister. I say, how can I live up to all of that? God's standard is perfect. And the beauty of that is God's standard will never lead us astray. God does not expect perfection in our life, but he holds before us a perfect standard, because if we have before us a perfect standard, we will never go astray following God's standard. The issue is not whether we're perfect. The issue is whether we're committed to virtue. How do I know this? Because Bathsheba was the woman. She morally failed, but she became a model of virtue. Matthew Henry says, the unspeakable worth of such a one, that's a virtuous mother, and the value which he that has such a wife ought to put upon her, showing it by his thankfulness to God and his kindness and respect to her, whom he must never think he can do too much for.